start with members on my right hand side. Honorable Mamuk.
Morning, Chair. Is it the far right or the near right? Where do you want to start? I'm not sure. Oh, okay. Good morning. I'm Gloria Borman, a member of this committee.
Good morning. Gerard Cornell, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Connie September, a member of this committee. Good morning.
Good morning. Robert Mugwena, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Honorable Minister. Chair, thank you. the honorable members for the opportunity to present our annual report to you. I'm quite comfortable that the Director General should get straight to the business of the report. What you will note from our report is that we have received an A successive clean audit, which speaks to the robustness of our financial management, and yet we have performed under challenging conditions, given that our mandate, our responsibilities have expanded, but the resources at our disposal have not. So during the course of the year, we had to continue to try and balance between a disproportionate allocation between financial and human resources required to meet an expanding mandate. In a situation where we have viewed our role as beyond merely shareholder oversight, we have been more engaging in terms of our shareholder responsibility. We have viewed ourselves as also a stakeholder manager, as well as a change manager, in regard to which we have had to try and define what programs would arise from this change in perspective with regard to our role. It became necessary for us to establish strong relations, particularly with the sector departments, in order to try and bridge the gap between what they do in relation to policy and what we have to do, the challenges that arise therefrom. This was one of the reasons why it has become necessary for us to begin to look at the legislation and other draft policies emanating from the sector departments that have an impact on our work, so that we are able on a consistent basis to engage with the policy departments. But we've gone further to look at facilitating other stakeholder relations, engaging, as we announced in the budget vote of last year, with the automotive sector, for example, with the oil and gas sector, to try and align the state-owned companies to focus on the needs of these customers. I think in the course of time, we should be able to report to the portfolio committee what we are doing in that regard. We also had to focus on the responsibility of implementing a new vision for the department, which vision we had articulated as driving productivity, efficiency and transformation in our state-owned companies, their customers and suppliers, in order to create jobs, develop skills, and implement industrialization. There is a whole lot of challenges that arose out of that. We had to ask our state-owned companies to begin to play then beyond what their balance sheets could afford. We had to ask them to begin to look at innovative ways of sourcing funding for the implementation of their capital project. We had to ask them to expand their skills targets. We had to ask them to look at a number of their programs to see where we can act more decisively beyond what we could afford in our balance sheet in order to expand the programs we're implementing. We also focused on the task of ensuring greater coordination with other government departments, particularly insofar as the infrastructure-related state-owned companies are concerned. In that regard, the President established early this year the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, which is of great assistance to us in terms of pursuing that vision of coordinated action in regards to infrastructure-related SOCs. But the department, as we will highlight, faces serious challenges in terms of human resources in regards to insufficient budget to hire more people, expertise that we need, but also in regards to regular movement in and out of the department in terms of skilled personnel. But that notwithstanding, we have been able to implement our programs, and so the clean audit that we achieved was not as a result of mere management of the financial resources of the department, but it was also in light of changing responsibilities and mandates and ability to implement the objectives that we had set ourselves. I think that the report that the Director General is going to present reflects that full gamut of challenges that we face, our achievements, and areas where we think there are serious weaknesses which we need to address, and will portray the true picture of where the department is and begin to highlight the areas where we want to move, the direction that we want to take to ensure that we fulfill our responsibility. The environment in which our state-owned companies are operating is changing, and changing very fast. The global economic slowdown and the impact on the real economy in South Africa have had a massive impact on our state-owned companies. During the year under review, we had the downgrading of the sovereign, as well as which had a consequent impact on some of our state-owned companies. Raising capital for capital projects from the international markets has become a challenge in that it has become more expensive. But that notwithstanding, we are satisfied that the build programs in particular are ongoing. There are other challenges which face some of our state-owned companies, which I am sure the committee is well aware of as a result of these problems. We have paid great attention to working closely with the state-owned companies, meeting twice in the past financial year with chairpersons in the chairpersons forum, meeting regularly with the chairpersons and CEOs to address the risks, the challenges, and a accountability. Our oversight mechanisms are robust. We ensure that we receive quarterly reports and study them very carefully and respond to them through investor briefs. And we have insisted on the state-owned companies, because the practice in the past was that the department sends an investor brief to the state-owned companies, and they do not respond to those briefs to indicate to us how they are addressing the issues we are raising in the briefs. And so we now have insisted that they need to respond, so that we are kept abreast as to how they are addressing the issues we raise in the investor briefs. And so we are implementing a robust oversight program, which needs to continue improving so that we are able to account for how the state-owned companies are performing under our portfolio. But that notwithstanding, Chair, as I have been frequently saying, the department is robust, trying to do its very best, and even though the environment is difficult for many of our state-owned companies, but we are continuing to perform and execute our mandate as required. Thank you. I will then, Chair, with your permission, ask the DG to present the annual report.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. The report has been tabled for several weeks now in Parliament. So I'm going to assume that it's been read. And what I will do in this presentation, Chair, would be to just tackle some of the main components and the substance of the results of our performance without really going through details, which is in the report itself. So this is how we're proposing to structure this presentation. We think it's always important to reflect on the economic context, the economic environment in which we as a department and the companies that we are responsible for operate. We will then outline the elements of our strategy, strategic thrust of our work. We will then quickly go through program highlights in each program area where budgets have been appropriated. And then we will give a sense of the organizational structure and some key statistics around movement of people, compensation of employees, which will also be part of the annual financial statements and the highlights therefrom. And then we will reflect on areas where we experience challenges and therefore have not been able to achieve some of our targets, reflect on what those challenges are and how we're proposing to tackle them going forward, and then to project a bit forward in regard to what are the strategic priorities in the period ahead. The economy has been experiencing a systemic decline with regard to GDP growth, with regard to employment. And if one takes a short to medium perspective, the picture remains fairly concerning. It is a kind of picture that challenges all economic actors, particularly us in government. Because we're a mixed economy, and so when we experience downturn like this, done through the activities of the Parastate House. Parastate House broadly, which also includes state-owned companies, have really been the main driver of investment in the economy, what we call cross-based capital formation. That graph there indicates where private business has been performing and where government and in particular public corporations have been performing. Typically you will see what emerges quite strongly is the role of the largest companies in the economy, which is Eskom and Transnet. A counter-cyclical policy framework seeks to crowd in private sector investment. Because as I said, when private sector perceives risks, they need confidence. And that confidence really should come from the state by providing a solid platform for demand and investment in the economy. This is a very important dynamic in our economy, which, as you will have seen, with the emphasis on capital investment through infrastructure rollout, we think will be the main driver of our economy going forward in an environment which clearly should remain quite challenged. I've made reference to unemployment, which has remained unacceptably high at 24% compared to the pre-crisis period of 2009. So, again, to emphasize the point, investment by state-owned companies is crucial because it supports the overall capacity and efficiency of the economy and helps us to build our industrial capabilities, which we hope will have a positive impact on the domestic economy, thereby creating a foundation for long-term growth. Against this background, therefore, our strategy has had a number of pillars. First, it has been the basic maintenance of shareholder oversight, which, as the Minister has indicated, remains fairly robust. What has characterized the tenure of Minister Kigaba has been a shift from a hands-off shareholder to a more active and, if need be, interventionist shareholder. The second area, which is very important, has been to endeavor to stabilize and reposition some of our SOEs, particularly those challenged balance sheets, looking at funding options, working with the Treasury to see how we can build a more sustainable flow of funds into the activities of some of those companies, particularly the more critical companies like Eskom. As you know, in the last few years, one of the areas of focus in regard to Eskom has been to make sure that they've got their funding sorted out so that they can deliver on the capacity expansion in the electricity sector. We've also begun to look at just more than just a shareholder oversight of governance, but to look at repositioning the companies so that they can play a much stronger role in the economy, making sure that they're aligned with government policy priorities, with a particular focus on their investment activities as well as their procurement activities. Along with that, also revising and refining our shareholder oversight. And then an area which the Minister touched upon, which remains important, is to continue to seek enhanced to succeed, we've identified a number of enablers. Again, Minister spoke to the appropriate resourcing. But more than that, to continue to seek improvements in the institutional model of the department. The department remains fairly small relative to the task that it has to tackle. We are, in this current year, beginning to see a steady increase as the Treasury avails resources, limited indeed, but they're beginning to respond. And I think that is important because the Treasury also recognizes the important role that the department plays, and therefore are beginning to respond positively to our requirements for resources. Now, clearly, in these difficult economic conditions, we will not always achieve everything we require, but if we establish a pattern over the next coming months and years of properly capacitating the department, I think it will be good for the country. We're looking also forward to the recommendations of the Presidential Review Commission, which is seeking to advise on how we can consolidate state-owned companies, how we can better manage them, and how we can better resource that function. Now, to move on to some of the highlights of the performance very quickly, with regard to the shareholder function and all of the activities that go with this, the signing of shareholder compacts, the delivery of strategic intent statements, the monitoring of quarterly reports, all of those activities have been effectively achieved in the period under review. It's only in one or two instances, which I'll come back to at a later stage, where, you know, for example, a shareholder compact has not been signed. But in broad terms, there's been full compliance with the statutory requirements, because all of this is governed, as you all know, by the PFMA and the Companies Act. As I indicated, the shareholder compact for Improco was not signed because as we were doing this, a new board came into place, and we allowed the board time to familiarize itself with the affairs of the company. But I'm sure by now I think that compact has been signed. The third quarter financial review of South African Express could not be completed as a result of the restatement of the company's financials. This is something which the committee will be familiar with. In the area of administration, really our activities there have focused on refining some of the shareholder governance tools, something we call the dashboard, which is where we collate in a single instrument all critical information with regard to the performance of the company's financial information, operational information, investment diversify its almost its business into other areas. And in the area of transport and aviation, it's really going to look at how we continue to promote efficiency improvements in the activities of Transnet, as well as also monitoring its and driving its capital investments, the acquisition of locomotives and other equipment for ports, and the pipeline. In the area of aviation, has been to continue to encourage our airlines to explore more profitable opportunities for revenues and financial sustainability, which we believe and everybody acknowledges are in the African continent. And so we have worked with the company to open up new routes, several new routes on the continent. We think that the future sustainability of our aviation company lies with expanding their market share on the African continent. Program 6 is called Joint Project Facility, and this is where we conduct a number of cross-cutting activities, cross-cutting initiatives, such as in regard to procurement, seeking to develop norms and standards with regard to how the companies do procurement, monitoring the program we call the Competitive Supply Development Program, which seeks to encourage the development of a strong supplier industry, which will be a major input into the capital investment programs of our companies going forward. The area of skills is another one that where we've been forcing the companies to better target, to be a lot more bold in regard to their plans for skills development, as well as in this, particularly going forward, emphasizing transformation, really dealing with BEE and other dimensions of transformation. This slide depicts the shift in the structure of the department since the beginning of last year, 2011. We undertook a comprehensive review of the structure of the department, working with the Treasury, the idea being to simplify, to reduce the number of programs, the areas of focus that we are looking at as we undertake the mandate of the department. So this just shows you the structure which we began to implement in this financial year. So as we report for the next financial year, we will be reporting on the basis of this structure. Here in this slide is an indication of our performance with regards to human resources. It shows you the size of the department's establishment, the extent to which we have serviced the vacancy. As you can indicate, in this year alone, up to 31 March 2010, there's a total of 36 new entrants into the department. Now, for a structure of just slightly over or under 200, the number 36 is quite significant. target set by DPSA of 2% at 3%, which is the level of disability in the department. And then, of course, the gender split, which shows that we're just under the 50-50% at 44.7%. I think that's 45%. We continue to focus on this area. As we speak, there are a number of appointments which are offers that we're preparing, and a significant number of those involve women. We think that we should be in a position to improve on our gender target going forward. This slide is a more updated indication of our human resource movements. Again, in this current financial year, starting in April up to the end of September, we've had 17 entries. But of course, that's slightly offset by the exits at 14. The next slide highlights of our financial performance that indicates our budget. And you'll see that we've had a slight decline, well, not slight, from 500, or slightly over 500 to 300 million. A reduction in budget. This has been mainly through the end of transfers from the department to SOEs. In some instances, support to companies is via an allocation under our budget from Treasury. So those transfer payments reduced in the period under review, leading to a drop in our budget. Overall expenditure is at 98%, which is quite a fairly high expenditure rate, and is within the norm of 2% where we sponsor students to do advanced studies, master's studies. It helped us to some degree to acquire these critical skills. But also working a lot more strategically and systematically with the companies themselves. Because in many instances, the exit is from the department to the company. So we think that if we can manage this and allow for a rotation of skills both ways, we should be able to draw from the companies as well, in as much as they also draw from us. We think that that will help in managing this area. But having said that, I do need to underscore the fact that there was no substantive impact on delivery, and as I indicated, you know, we've achieved most of our targets for the year. And as the minister indicated, I'm pleased that we got another year, the eighth year of the clean audit. So it's a tight ship we're running, but well managed, and really reliant on professional staff that really make us proud. They work hard. Majority of them are highly stressed, highly overworked, but they are committed. Because I think that the work we do is quite exciting. Being the custodians of such an important responsibility of overlooking some of the biggest assets of the state, biggest actors in the economy. It's really fulfilling, challenging but fulfilling. The opportunities for learning are endless. And so my wish is that we manage this area in a way that we can hold on to our skills and experience the people in the department. Because it's not a kind of a place where you come in for a year or two and you leave. You only really get better with time, and the quality of the work improves with time. This is just the detail on the transfer payments. I want to just go through the areas where we did not quite achieve the targets we set ourselves. In the area of energy, the application for the next round of prices, Eskom's electricity prices, PD3, as we call it, was delayed because we had to engage with the Department of Energy to align and to look at the continuing to put in place stable regulatory framework. The Department of Energy has also been undertaking work on the price and policy for electricity. The work around special pricing agreements with the peak energy users, that work we eventually, after having experienced the challenges in the negotiation, referred it to NERSA, the regulator. In the area of broadband, I've indicated that we didn't conclude the shareholder compact on time because we allowed the new board to familiarize themselves with the contents of that compact. In the area of legal, we had undertook to revisit the enhancement of the shareholder management model, where in previous years we had made an attempt to develop legislation. We thought that with the advent of the Presidential Review Commission on state-owned companies, which we knew was going to also look at this area, we thought that perhaps we should wait until that work has been done. It is now being finalized and we're engaging with those recommendations. We that we engage with other departments because the sort of concerns around remuneration that we have are not unique to our department. Other departments as well that have state-owned companies are struggling with the same things. But we've done the most deepest and rigorous work in this area. And so there's an expectation that what we've done will be generalized across government. So that has tended to slow down the work, but it is fairly advanced, and we should be able to come out with the results soon. With regard to DINEL, the whole work around repositioning the company, that also wasn't considered because as we are embarking upon this, the Department of Defense also starts to do a review of defense policy and strategy. That work has been fairly advanced. We are waiting the queue from the Department of Defense. We know that the process was slowed down slightly as a result of change of minister, but we expect that we should be able to pick this up hopefully before this current financial year is out. I've indicated the challenges around the work on SAFCO. We have engaged a couple of service providers from the University of Stellenbosch, which has expertise in forestry. But also, most importantly, have engaged a range of stakeholders, the communities themselves, other departments that have an important role and bearing in this area, the Department of Forest and Fisheries, Department of Rural Development, which is responsible for finalization of the land claims. And so it's been a fairly intense engagement to try and find the model. It's not easy. We'll probably come up with something that's never tested in government, where you have a state-owned company that is in partnership with communities, more or less along the lines of Alexco. But this we're not doing on the basis of a court ruling, like either settlement in the case of Alexco. Because even with Alexco, notwithstanding the progress we've achieved, still a long way. We'll still experience the challenges as we advance with that model. But we hope that by the end of this current financial year, we should finalize this work. We had also proposed to undertake concessions with Transnet for branch lines. Members will be aware that this area is impacted upon by the work the Department of Transport are doing on the rail policy, which is also not yet finalized. The work is advanced, we are aware, but that has had the effect of slowing us down in this area. down, production flow down, so Transnet moves less volumes. Let's say a transport less passengers. And so this is an area that is concerning for us, and we'll be watching very closely how the economy performs as we go forward, because it has a very direct
much, DJ. Thanks for this good report. Before I invite members to interact with the report, I'd also like to thank the minister for his open remarks. You know, we have, as you said, DG, the committee has done its oversight work during this financial year, and it's very clear that we do, wherever we go, whichever entity we visit, we do, let me say not whichever, but most of the entities that we do visit or have visited, it is clear that there is remarkable progress that we see. And it is largely the leadership that the minister provides, that you provide, but also the executives in the department, that they are also doing their work. We do know that there are challenges here and there, and we hope that these challenges will be resolved with time, as you are working very hard in trying to address these challenges. The committee will always support the good work that this department is doing. It is very unfortunate that we have a situation where, in fact, the committee has expressed its concern about the funding of the department, and we've really made that very clear, that for the department to improve on the good work that it is doing, the necessary funding, you know, should really be provided to the department. I will now, before that, I think it's important for me to wish the department well in this next financial year, that we'll see even more improvement on the work that you're doing. And we know that you will do us proud. You've set yourself good standards, and I think with the team that you have, DG and Minister, you know, you can only move forward. You can only record better results as we move on. And I'd like to wish you well on behalf of the committee. I'll invite members to Honorable Natasha, Honorable Mukwena, Honorable Kuranov, Honorable Mare, Honorable Borman, Honorable Hololo, in that order. Honorable September and Honorable Sonto will be the last. Please let me just remind you, it's one person, three questions, first round. If we still have time for another round, you'll raise the others during the second round. Honorable Michael.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, you're confusing people. Just now with Honourable Natasha, now Honourable Michael.
I have to remind myself that in the committee.
Separate. Chair, thank you very much, and thank you to the department. I've always been under the impression, and the Minister has said in the budget debate, that he has an open door policy with us, and it's something that we've always enjoyed and looked forward to engaging with the Minister. And Minister, that's why I must let you know that I'm slightly concerned at the fact that I have sent various letters to your office requesting a meeting with you to discuss in general things that are perturbing the Democratic Alliance and myself and my committee member from the DA, Eric Marais. And Chair, I keep getting a reply from a Ms. Matlongo to say that you won't be seeing me. And I can't understand why this open door policy has suddenly closed. That on a side, Minister, perhaps we can maybe chat outside and see why we can't seem to come together. Chair, when the Minister does something correct, I'm the first person to congratulate him. And Minister, I would like to congratulate you for the action that you took with regards to SA Express. I think it was a very bold step that you took, a very needed step, and I think that we are all the better in South Africa for that step being taken. Chair, my questions. With regards to South African Airways, Minister, I think you will agree that the 5 billion rand guarantee that has been given to South African Airways has caused a lot of controversy, and I think you'd agree with good reason considering the last 10 years SAA has hemorrhaged 14.7 billion rand. Chair, we saw firstly the board members resign, and we saw comments coming out from your department that you were the last person to know that they had resigned, that there was a breakdown between the shareholder and the board members. I'm wondering if we could please have an elaboration as to why this breakdown happened, including the breakdown that happened a week later with the CEO resigning and other people resigning, because I think that it creates a chaotic state within the airline when you have this mass set of resignations. So I would really like to know perhaps what this breakdown specifically revolved around. Chair, in the new CEO in 2006 actually sued South African Airways. Minister, should we be worried about this? Can we have an explanation from you as to your feelings about this? Chair, then, in terms of the 5 billion rand bailout, a policy document was drafted many, many years ago, actually commissioned by Mac Maharaj, in which the country was geared to look towards encouraging competitive behavior. Are these continuous bailouts to the national carrier not going to systematically kill off smaller low-cost airlines that don't have the privilege of coming to government to get these continuous bailouts? And then, Chair, if I may now just move to Eskom. The Deputy President, Honourable Khalema Mokrante, in reaction to the Medupi project's connection with Hitachi in the form of having the boiler contract, actually stated in Parliament that politically connected firms should not really be allowed to do business with the state. Chair, I'd like to know from the Department, are they worried that Eskom's continuous involvement in providing contracts to these politically connected firms is a problem, as the Deputy President indicated, and are we worried that these politically connected companies continuously cause a rise in cost because of time overruns? Chair, in light of that, I wrote to the Minister and asked him about the spiralling costs at Eskom's Ingula project, where it went from 8.9 billion to 23.8 billion. And I would just like to know from the Department, is the Department going to invoke the clause in the contract that now requests penalties to be paid due to the overrun? And then finally, Chair, the BHP contract. No, because it's connected to Ingula, Chair, and to Medupi. But it's the last one I'll be asking, Chair. The BHP contract, the 5 billion rand loss for Eskom that resulted in, is this any different in the Department's opinion to the SAA bailout? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome a very insightful presentation by the DG, prefaced by a very progressive remarks by the Minister. Three quick points. I'll defer the fourth one to the next round, if it's possible. First one, DG and the Minister, the PRC is the main feature here. as an MP, you are a doctor. In that field, you require a doctorate, he said, in transport economics. I say, when did you start? He said, I grew up, I joined Transnet at the age of 15. I eventually grew up like a tree in Transnet. But you see, that's what a parastero can do. It can actually pick up a little boy of 15 years and bring him up to actually acquire that expertise of a doctorate. Just one example. So, when you, Minister, have done an excellent job, when we went to your offices in Pretoria, we were quite impressed with the youthfulness of the personnel. There's a lot of young people running around there. Not running around, but I mean, at the desk, in an excellent running around and out of an energy, not butterfly, but actually doing, you could see that they actually like they had a passion. So now, there should be ingrown mentorship. And I think we must link up with the universities around there. TUT, Pretoria University, and other universities around there, VETS, UJ, etc. When you sit here and have a creative approach in mentorship, mentoring all the people, along the lines of the expertise required, so in the fruition of time, they can acquire that expertise, which currently we say is missing, instead of waiting for that glorious CV that will come across the ocean through the internet to say, here's an appropriate person, because we'll end up landing up with the likes of Coleman Andrews, etc. So I don't think we should really fold our arms and wait for that expertise to fall out of the sky like manna. Second point. Third point. Transnet. I was pleasantly, suitably impressed, Minister, when I heard you announcing the 95 locomotives that you've purchased, that you've entered an agreement with China to manufacture. What is particularly thrilling and delighting me there is the fact that there's going to be 6% localization. You know, the Chinese are going to come here now. They're not just going to ship all these things, manufacture them in Beijing, bring them here, done and dusted, but they're actually going to ensure that there's 6% localization. That is direct empowerment. Now, the question is, how much will this cost, and how long is it going to take for the entire, a fleet to be delivered? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I echo the sentiments of the rest of the committee so far to congratulate the DG and his department, not only on a clean audit, but also I think it's a fantastic achievement to receive 8 consecutive clean audits. I think that makes this department probably one of the top 3 departments in the public service. And I think it's just befitting that you convey the congratulations not only to the top management, but to the other 167 employees of the department from this committee on a very proud achievement. And also a very good synopsis given by the Minister when he introduced this annual report. 3 questions. One, and I'm just going to refer to the annual report pages just to link it up, but I'm not going to read from that. On page 29, you talk about the special pricing agreement and that you've applied to NASA for a determination. And you state in the annual report that it's outside the control of the department currently and the delay is due to NASA processes. So the question is, one, what are we doing to get the answer from NASA? What actions are we taking? Are you in discussion with him? Where is this delay? Because it's good to say it's outside our department, outside our control, but it's a burning issue and there's no movement. So if you can just address us on the outstanding or your initiative to apply to NASA for determination. That's the first one. The second one is on the multiple private operators on the branch lines. That's on your page 47. Now, it seems there's no movement. There's no trust, because there's a lot of private capital sitting and not being invested. So if you could just talk to us, what are the reasons for this? The same goes for private, public-private partnerships in the rail infrastructure. On the same page, 47, you say the status of that is that we're still busy with consultations. Now, we can do consultations for another year on another 2 years. Again, what is the hiccups that we cannot get to loosen this capital in branch lines and in partnerships between private and government? Then my last question on page 68, you talk about the South African Airways. Now, South African Airways went from a profit of 649 million in 2010-2011 to the current loss of 1.3 billion. We haven't received the annual report of SAA. I think the minister announced it will only be tabled in Parliament on the 30th of November this year. So it's only the end of next month. Then on you also have what you explained to us and what we saw when we visited you, the Isibuku dashboard, where you do quarterly assessments, annual assessments, and it seemed to us when we visited your department to be a very effective measurement dashboard. The minister referred to investor briefs from the department to the state-owned companies, and that you need responses by the SOC to respond to the investor brief. Now, how is it possible that we have this Isibuku dashboard, we have investor briefs, but still this entity, when you look at the measurement of performance against targets, only achieved 13 out of 29. Is there a problem with the dashboard that is not fine-tuned enough to locate the early warning system, or is there something else that we must? And lastly, the consultants on page 157. Your consultant is 21.5 million rand. About 20% of that total consultant spend went on SAA. Just more than four million. Was that money well spent? Did we get value for money? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to be very short. I first want to start with the two things that I want to highlight that I really want to congratulate the department, and that is the signing of the CLR contract and the quarterly financial review. I think it is of utmost importance, and the question would be if we can pull it through for the term ahead. Chairperson, I must take this opportunity now to address the Minister directly. What is of a major concern of the DA is the application of the 16% increase by ESCOM to NERSA. As we all know, municipalities use, and I put it in brackets, a markup on the tariffs to actually use electricity income as a main income stream. And what is also of a major concern is the wide percentage range of markup between the various municipalities. I think the minister must have a conversation with the Minister of Corporate Governance, because it's so wide between the smaller and bigger municipalities, it must be addressed. What also is important is that this income stream has become the main income stream for municipalities and not property tax, as most people think. Outstanding payments of municipal accounts are increasing, and the negative spiral of bad debts are becoming worse. To find the balance now of actually financing the infrastructure capitalization of expanding electricity networks and the balance of the tariffs that must be raised is of utmost importance, and I think the minister must please address this issue. The consumer, as we all sit in this room today, are paying a monthly hour another negative impact of people not paying their bills. Lastly, I want to ask the minister, or maybe the DJ, if they can just highlight us on the Medupi and Kusile. Are they on track? If not, can you just give us a short update where we stand today with the expansion erecting? I would appreciate that. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you. Let me also say it's a pleasure to work with this department, and thank you very much for a very concise presentation today. And we have been engaging over a period of time, so we have been asking sometimes the same old questions over and over again. Let me pick up on something different. I want to just add on, so this isn't really a question, Chair, to the consultants thing. And that is, I want to just extend that not only to the what was paid for consultants and the value for money for SAA, but in general, that 21.5 million that is spent on consultants. What delivery on the ground do we see from that expertise that is used? Then I want to pick up what for me is really of critical importance, and that is the human resource. This is a bit of a strange department because it's not a policy-making department. And so it would seem to me that from what I'm hearing, that remuneration is a concern and a problem, a challenge for employing the right people with the right skills. Now, I also heard the Minister say that he's engaging very robustly with these policy departments. Now, our policy regarding remuneration, public service remuneration, how much of a deterrent is that? And what are we doing in that regard to engage with that? Because obviously there are skills here that are critical, and I think possibly it's coming out in the SAA thing as well, in that how much do we know about what actually has caused the problems that we have at SAA and the huge amounts of fuel and so on, and there could have been other ways of dealing with that. So that's the one thing, and I think that our human resource is critical, that the right people in the right places. And then just my another one, and it's also to do with engaging with our policy departments, and I want to refer to beyond Kusile and Medupi. And it is a great concern to me that perhaps we will find ourselves in a similar situation to what we were back there in 2008, where ESCOM has been wanting to move forward, but because of policy, we've not been able to. So my question there, what is the discussion with yourself and the policy departments regarding moving beyond that? And then my third question would be relating to uncertainties. And I want to agree that the uncertainties that we are finding ourselves with, and I refer here to PRC, the SOCs themselves regarding, for example, SAFCOL. You know, I don't think people can be excited about working where they're not sure about how they're moving forward. Policy reviews. And these are certainly not conducive to the private sector investment. And so my question is, again, relating to the minister's involvement and discussions with the departments, policy, so that we do get certainty in moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the department, the GGE, and the minister on the presentation that they made. I think most of my questions have been asked, but I'll just ask some, try to formulate other questions. The one will be on the infrastructure. You know, it was announced, I think yesterday, about the 4 trillion rands infrastructure upgrade. And now I'm a bit puzzled here about the other infrastructure upgrade that was announced recently by the President and the Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan. I just wanted to check these two programs, the 4 trillion one and the other one, the infrastructure upgrade. What is the relationship between the two? Are we talking about the same project, or is this new, the one of the 4 trillion and the other one? Something different. I don't know, the first one, it's a clarity seeking question, actually. And then there's this other one, I just wanted to check with the shareholder. I think I asked the same question the other day about the status of the Aventura. Where are we with this project, actually, which is an entity that was dealing with the resorts? Have we wounded it up? Did we wound it up? Wounded up. What is it?
Wounded.
Wounded up. Right. Thank you very much for the correction. Yeah, not wounded up. Wounded up. Okay, maybe the last one will be on the consultants. I just wanted, it's a comment, it's not a question in any way. In that we need to be alert as the department about this question of consultants. I'm saying this because I just had my colleagues mentioning it, that, you know, we must be very vigilant when coming to this one, because you'll find people resigning from the department itself as CEOs, as CFOs, and going at the back door and then coming in as consultants. We should just thoroughly check these people when they come and do business with the department. It's just a warning, that one, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll echo the same sentiments of members with regards to the auditor outcome of the department. And I think, generally speaking, really giving sufficient attention to its own targets that it has been set by the department, except for a few, and that's what I want to speak on. Chair, the President assembled a number of people together last week to talk about the economy. Arising out of that, one of the things that he spoke to was this aspect of salaries of CEOs and so on. Can I hear whether there's a pronouncement from the state-owned entity CEOs in responding to that call that has been made? In your own report, it is one of the matters that has not been sufficiently concluded, although you have started to engage on it. I would support what the other members said on the SAFCO matter, but I think the question is, what
what do you envisage there? Because I think we've pronounced ourselves sufficiently on what we think should be the future of SASCO and not to get rid of it. I want to say, Chair, that one of the other things that you have not been able to, one of the other targets that you were not able to deal with is this one on doing analysis of the macroeconomic policies as it regards state-owned entities. I think that the departments should be encouraged to deal with this matter, to conclude this matter as a matter of urgency. And I'll tell you why I say that, Chair. That this matter needs to be concluded. Because you see, I mean, you can attempt to create a huge hype around SAA, but if you do not locate the discussion within the broader economic framework and whether our macroeconomic policies support or otherwise all the entities, the truth is all the entities are borrowing, all the entities have been given guarantees. I haven't seen any bailouts that are being spoken about. All of them are being given guarantees. Now, that's why I think it's important to have this macroeconomic analysis concluded by the department, because the truth is a state must protect its own. You don't see an economic meltdown internationally and you say to your children, out you go, one by one. And we do not bother what will be happening with you out there. So I do want to say that the department does show with all its entities that it rises to the economic challenges, but I think it must provide a bit of a more stabilized economic intervention with all the entities, because the reality is that the economic international economic instabilities are having a huge impact on the entities, and therefore we are interested to engage with the department. What further cushioning are you giving to these entities? What further growth plan over and above the new economic growth plans and so on? What further growth plans are you giving to these entities? And can you provide the country with a cohesive program that doesn't look like an ad hoc situation that you are giving? And so I think that it would assist us if we do that, because, you know, when the currency devalues all the time, it has an impact. Ask those that go and use their frequent flyer miles, and then they pay this, you know, this strange fees for just using your the taxes that they pay. The taxes has been attached to the devaluation of the currency all the time, and therefore you don't pay one cent. And so you can make very many, I think that, you know, where the market is continuously failing us, it would be interesting to know what further issues are you putting in there. You can't talk about SAA and not talk about the fact that there are market failures and interventions that is required. You can't talk about Transnet and not talk about the fact that they are also subjected to very little maneuvering, macroeconomic maneuvering that a state can make to deal with that. You can't talk about these entities without talking about capital inflows and outflows and what effect it does have on these entities. And therefore, we think maybe the department must tell us, you know, what are the different options that are being envisaged? Do you have any maybe soft plans that you have, and that could be your own internal, you know, if you take pension and provident fund, your PICs and so on, they are soft ones that you inject, and with and selling of bonds and all of these things, and whether you will make this little bit more open and attractive to your own entities. So, Chair, I would want to ask whether apart from you not meeting this target, I mean, what are the things that you want to put into this target? I do want to congratulate the Minister in particular for bringing about stabilization in the area of governance in the entities. I think almost all entities, except for probably in Fraco, which you mentioned, has gone through a rigorous turnaround on board and board changes. And the Minister should be congratulated for bringing stability immediately into South African Airways, stability insofar as the governance is concerned, because the country surely cannot say that, you know, there's a vacuum that that has been left. And I think it was correct to go into that direction. So, Chair, I would be interested to hear from the department, you know, what their thinking is in this direction. And I do think the onus is on the department to have a conversation both with NERSA and ESCOM. No one got a 16% increase in the country, not even in Marikani. No one. And therefore, if you want to have a, you know, a macroeconomic debate about 16% versus what your ordinary citizens, you start from a zero base. And I think the discussion must be from that angle when the regulator have a conversation on what dispensation they want to place on the table insofar as percentage increases. Because all you will do is you will just further create imbalances in the market by coming with double-digit figures, which there will be no one left to pay. Thank you.
I have a question.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Honourable Michael, the open door is open. There might have been reasons merely why we could not have met until now. I will attend to that to ensure that the meeting takes place. I'm keen to hear your views. Certainly you have been constructive and in engaging with us, and we have no reason to run away. Even if you were not constructive, we would have no reason to run away. With regard to South African Airways, the 5 billion rand guarantee to South African Airways is a recapitalization instrument. It's meant to address the future challenges of the airline rather than deal with its debt burden. We have been discussing this with the National Treasury since May this year, and I've been discussing it with the airline itself since last year, when they brought to our attention that there were these challenges which they were facing going forward. And the question that we asked them was whether the airline had been properly capitalized in the first instance. And this was one of the issues we've been discussing with the National Treasury, because we have been of the view that our intervention with this airline has been ad hoc, and we have not looked at the proper capitalization of the airline, something which many other shareholders with regard to their airlines have had. why it's a two-year guarantee was because we, as the shareholder, raised this, if you might remember, we were the very first to say, we don't think we are going to, it's prudent of us to just give a blank check to SAE. That attached to the guarantee should be a long-term vision and strategy for the airline, the elements of which should include making Africa the primary market for SAA. The African routes are more profitable for SAA than many other international routes. But there has to be an overhaul of the route network and other operational issues affecting the airline. We have been very firm in saying that strategy needs to emerge, because what we don't want to do is to keep returning to the national treasury, to government, as the shareholder, after every 2 years to request either an extension of existing guarantees or new guarantees. We have therefore said clearly that tied to this guarantee is the finalization of that long-term vision and strategy, which should include the finalization of the fleet procurement plan for the airline, because the airline at the present moment is functioning on old and aging aircraft in an environment where we wanted to change strategy to increase its route network, establish new routes, and its competitors are using more modern aircraft that are also fuel efficient. And so we are working on that. I have established a task team to facilitate the development of that strategy. Now, I hear people around saying that task team is supposed to develop the strategy itself. I've not said that the task team will sit down and start crafting the strategy. Their job is to facilitate the strategy and ensure that they present the strategy, because linked to the strategy is how do we utilize our aviation assets as a whole. You have South African Airways this side, South African Express this side, and there's no alignment between the two. Both of them need fleet renewal, but they are not properly aligned to support one another. And there are other policy matters we must attend to, which impact on the performance of these airlines, some of which are what the Honorable September has spoken about, the macroeconomic factors, and some are related to certain sector departments, such as the transit visa issues at home affairs, things that we need to bring together into one composite plan, integrated strategy to support our airline, our aviation assets. In my honest view, the questioning of the state's support of its airlines questions rather the logic of the involvement of the state in the economy. Now, this administration has taken the view that we are going to be led by the ruling party. We are going to participate in the economy. There are sectors which have been identified in which we are participating, and therefore the airlines being one of those, the aviation sector being one of those sectors, the state and the state owning the aviation assets, we therefore have to take decisions from time to time as the shareholder, as any shareholder would, to support our assets, to support our companies. I think that the other airlines also have a right to go to their shareholders, to approach their shareholders and request support, without asking whether it is logical for this government to support its aviation assets, or to support Eskom, or to support Transnet, because this is a policy decision we have taken. As far as I understood, and I will address this, as far as I understood, there had been a series of engagements with the board of between the board of SAA and I, and between the DG and the management of SAA. When I say the DG, I mean the DG and his subordinates and SAA management, to not the DG, DG. to address certain challenges that faced SAA. I would like to refer, Chairperson, with your permission, members of the committee, to a very extensive statement I made at the AGM, post the AGM of SAA, where I addressed in detail these engagements, which then left me flabbergasted when I heard of a breakdown in relations. Because quite honestly, I had not been aware that there was a breakdown in relations between the shareholder and the airline. Even the Tuesday night, 3 days before the board resigned, I had a three-hour meeting with the then chairperson of SAA, in which we had extensive discussions about a whole range of issues, and I we agreed that we are handling this situation. We were in regular discussions with the National Treasurer. And so the views emanating, and I note that they have mutated from a breakdown in relations between the shareholder and the airline to a breakdown in relations between the bureaucracy in the department and the airline. I wish to reject that too. And I want to state clearly, Chairperson, that I stand behind my officials. They have done all they could to provide support to SAA under difficult circumstances. Remember that we don't hold the power to issue a guarantee. The GCC has to meet and take that decision. I myself was of the view that when the GCC does meet and trying to preempt it, that it shouldn't just say you've applied for a guarantee, yes, you have it.
But it should attach, sorry, Chairperson, GCC Minister?
Government Guarantee Committee. Yes, sorry. It's the Government Guarantee Committee. It's with you that you need stringent conditions attached to the guarantee to deal with this pattern of frequent returns to the National Treasury to request guarantees and financial support. So, in our view, the relations were cordial and robust until we were advised that they were not. We had to ask difficult questions, and we must not be dissuaded from doing that. Those difficult questions might not be compatible to some people, but they are necessary. We have to ask them. Because there mustn't be a view that merely because you are a state-owned company means that the state must provide blind support. Our own vision expects efficiency and productivity in the performance of our state-owned companies, and we want them to perform like that. The resignation of the members of the board, and I must state it quite categorically clear, these members of the board who resigned had served SAA under difficult conditions. Extremely well. They did the best they could under difficult conditions. A jump in the fuel prices from 22% to 36%, the global downturn in 2008, nobody could have anticipated that. How long it was going to be, when they took over in 2009, they wouldn't have known, and neither this government would have known how long the global downturn. But even the drastic manner in which it happened, for those who watched closely the shift in the economic situation in 2008 would know that it was quite dramatic. Huge companies, banks, financial institutions going bust was a dramatic phenomenon, at least in modern times. So they would not have expected that this would last so long. We hear from the financial analysts that, including our own Reserve Bank, that this is going to be a protracted situation. And so we would not have expected as difficult a situation as this. And I think that they did the best they could under difficult conditions. Could they have done better? We believe they could. So it's not as if there were these exogenous factors and there weren't anything that the airline could have done better within the areas over which it had capacity to try and mitigate some of the worst effects of these conditions. And some of the things certainly need to be discussed further with sector departments, such as the airport charges, which are really strenuous on our airlines, both SAA and SAA Express and all other airlines. But the resignation of the members of the board 2 weeks before the AGM, in which they were going to be rotated anyway, really had no impact, because we already had received approval from cabinet to rotate the board. We had new names. That's why a few hours after they resigned, we replaced them. It really was not a problem. Neither would the resignation of the CEO have had as dramatic an impact, because three members of the EXCO resigned out of 14. It leaves us with 11. There is the new board immediately met, took decisions and advised us of the steps they had taken. The new board, to its credit and in its discretion, has written to me indicating that they don't want to create corporate governance problems by having an executive chair. Because I had agreed to the appointment of the executive chair until such a time as there is a new CEO. And I've given them 3 months to do that from the date of the 15th October when the AGM was held. They have made suggestions to me about how to deal with this, and I am studying their suggestions and will revert to them, because I certainly wouldn't want to create corporate governance problems as well. So, insofar as SAA is concerned, we have gone even further to address members of staff to allay their fears, because an anomaly happened in the process of these resignations. Board members resign, and before they inform the shareholder, they've sent emails to members of staff at SAA. Now, if I resign as minister, I must write to the person who appointed me, the president. I've got no reason to write letters to all these officials who are sitting here telling them that I'm resigning before I have satisfied myself that the president has received my resignation. And once he receives it, it's his duty to communicate my resignation, it's not mine. That was the first anomaly. So this is made public before it's made to me. Now, I couldn't claim that I have been made aware, because I really read about it from the media, and as the media was asking queries about this resignation, then I say, I'm not aware. But as soon as I was aware, I then took necessary steps to address the situation. It was necessary for us to address members of staff, to allay their fears, to assure them that the airline is in order, that the shareholder is taking necessary steps, working with the new board to address the challenges that are being faced. As far as we're concerned, in 3 months' time, SAA will have a new CEO, and the other executive members who resigned will also have been appointed, and therefore there is no problem whatsoever. We are trying to work very hard. I should be meeting the task team next week. The DG will be meeting them this week to expedite the process of developing the strategy. I've given them until the 15th December to present the strategy to me. Whether that will be a final strategy or not really depends on the volume of work that we are going to do between now and then, but that's the deadline I've given them. We had appointed private consultants to provide us with a diagnostic overview of SAA. Because when we were advised by the board that they need a guarantee, the question we asked, the challenges at SAA, are they only financial? Is there nothing else? So we appointed consultants, they did that diagnostic review, they presented their report to me in September. Not Honorable Coney, but September nonetheless. possible to turn SAA around, I believe it is. There are other airlines that are SAA's peers in Africa that over the last 3 years, even as our finances were going uphill and down the valley, they have been posting consistent profits. And it means there is something they are doing right which we are not doing. And therefore we need to do the same thing. We are a stronger brand than them. We can compete with them fiercely. We can turn the airline around to make it profitable. And I think that's what we need to work around the clock to achieve. Now,
just a very quick follow-up, Minister. Does that mean that we might look forward to restoring the route between Cape Town and Durban?
That's a difficult and operational question, Chair. But I don't think, you know, I don't think increasingly, I love mango. I use mango. Mango between Durban and Cape Town. I've flown it between Johannesburg and Cape Town. They've got Wi-Fi on air. You can work while on aboard mango. I actually would recommend it to anybody, to everybody. Increasingly, the low-cost carriers are going to take more routes domestically. But domestically, no route is, as a matter of principle, off the limits. If the routes can become profitable, you can still have SAA on that route. But I think that Mango, as an SAA subsidiary, is a very good airline. And I think that those who haven't tried it should try it. It's a very good airline. I would recommend it any day. Now, the second question, insofar as Hitachi is concerned, one, both Medupi and Kusile are online. They are on schedule, I mean. They are on schedule. We are on schedule to have first power supplied from Medupi in the final quarter of 2013. The delays which had been experienced at Medupi were addressed. I convened a meeting with the Japanese ambassador and the executives of Hitachi to discuss the problems that we were experiencing. And we agreed on a series of interventions and they were implemented. The CEO of Hitachi came down to meet with us to understand the challenges that we were raising with them. One of the things that Eskom briefed us about was a meeting of the utilities that are like Eskom. They were all surprised. Well, first, they indicated to Eskom that they face similar problems with their contractors as Eskom. The challenge is how do you manage the contractors, and they all faced similar challenges. But were surprised at how Eskom was able to intervene with the support of the shareholder to in the management of the contractors. And so the CEO of Hitachi is working with us to ensure that the concerns around the project are addressed, and the department is part of the steering committee which sits monthly to monitor progress, and we meet and talk with the Japanese embassy to ensure that the problems with regard to the delivery of Medupi are addressed. In Gula, the cost following initial projections are 21 billion rand, which has not changed after all the contracts have been signed. The 9 billion rand was a projection which later changed, in particular due to geology. On the second or third, that Saturday, the president will be at Ingula to monitor the progress, and that project is also on schedule to be delivered according to schedule. It's quite clear that the management of the contract is not only the function of the penalties, it is also the function of the skills within us who are contracting them to monitor the contract and ensure that they deliver as expected. That has been one of the big challenges with regard to all of these the big contracts. And I think that in regard to the big capital programs, we are learning invaluable lessons about how to manage them, particularly at the level of Eskom and Transnet. Given the sheer volume of the investment into capital projects to be undertaken over the next 5 to 7 years, those skills are quite urgent, and the department itself, you know, we announced at the budget vote that we are going to establish a capital project office. The challenge is that we don't have the resources, money, to be able to establish it as fast as we would have wanted to. We are working with the DPSA, the IDC, Transnet and Eskom to establish this office. And I'm confident that in the next few months, we should have this office to assist us to manage the state-owned companies and monitor their implementation of the capital project. BHP Billiton, you will have heard that SAA has submitted a request to NERSA to rule on that contract. Eskom, sorry, not SAA, Eskom. We will await that report on how NERSA will rule. But we are as concerned as the rest of the South Africans about that contract, the manner in which it was entered into, how it has been managed. We are quite concerned. We are keen that NERSA should rule, though we would have preferred that an agreement is arrived at directly between Eskom and BHP about the contract, rather than defer the decision to the regulator. But nonetheless, any solution better than the present will be welcomed by ourselves. The Presidential Review Committee on State-Owned Companies has concluded its business, submitted its report to Cabinet. The report is being managed there. I think the person qualified to talk about it is the minister in the presidency.
There are two of them.
Minister Chabane. Yes, Minister Chabane. The report makes very good proposals. I'm not by that saying it favors us. I'm just saying it makes very good proposals on how we manage state-owned companies. And I think that it would be within the capacity of the committee to invite Minister Chabane to talk about it. We share the sentiment that we need to develop homegrown expertise on a whole range of areas, management, engineering, and others. And I think that the state-owned companies are doing their best to try, especially Transnet and Eskom, because their balance sheet enables them to do this. They are doing their best to try and deal with this responsibility. Ideally, you would want your leadership within these state-owned companies to have emerged from within, grown within the company. They must understand the culture of the company. Hopefully someday we will get there. With regard to the 95 locomotives that the procurement program announced yesterday with China South Rail, the cost of the project are confidential. It's around 3 billion, the round figure. Confidential because there is a 1064 locomotive procurement program that must be concluded in the next quarter. Now, if you announce the cost of this, you are then saying to the potential bidders, this is the round figure, this is the figure around which you need to work. So, we have agreed with China South Rail because they gave Transnet the quickest turnaround plan that they will deliver the first few next year. And then the rest right through 2014. The first 10 of these will be done in China. The other 85 will be done in South Africa using even our own locally made inputs. Our idea is that fleet procurement must be so localized that we are able to establish a manufacturing hub in South Africa that does not only supply our own needs, but can export to the regional and global market. With regard to wagons, for example, we already are able to do 90-95% South African-made weapons. We've been exporting many in the region. Earlier this year, we exported 200 to BHP Billiton in Mozambique. There is an order pipeline of about 25,000. And so we are expecting that all of that, and this excludes Prasa. This is just still Transnet alone. If you were to do all of that with Transnet Rail Engineering as your base, the amount of jobs, of money that will circulate within South Africa will be quite enormous. The skills that will be developed, because to manufacture a locomotive or wagon, is not like making your clay cow. This is serious stuff. It's a serious skill. So we are very very optimistic about this dream of having a manufacturing hub for locomotives and wagons in South Africa, which would make South Africa one of the global players in this sector. I'm answering some of the questions, then the DG will deal with others. With regard to Eskom, the honorable members will remember that when Eskom announced a drop this year for the final year of the MYPD2 from 25.9% to 16%, there were three things which they said were conditions for this. One of those was that over the next 5 years, the coal prices shall increase by single digits. Secondly, that our demand side management for electricity will continue to improve, which means that the demand for electricity will be kept at minimum. And obviously, there you expect both the price, the industrial clients as well as the residential clients to come to the party to give back to Eskom 10% of the power which is currently being consumed. These remain some of the assumptions insofar as the MYPD3 tariff applications are concerned. There is no doubt that our economy cannot take a drastically high tariff increase, because we are going through difficulties. Our growth targets are forecast to drop, and the credit rating of the country has been dropping. And so the country is going through serious economic challenges. But the country is also going through a build program. And somehow, resources must be found to pay for that build program. The current tariff application by Eskom has not considered many parts of the IRP2, many elements of the IRP2, which Eskom has considered to be policy issues which can't be resolved through a tariff application. They need to be resolved at policy level by government. But they included the renewables. So the application as it stands is going to be subjected to public hearings, presentations by various interested parties, and so that NERSA, having considered all of those views, will then take a final determination, make the final determination. I would encourage political parties to also make submissions. I am not in a position sitting where I am sitting to determine whether the application by Eskom can be altered or not. We had engaged, even at my level, with various stakeholders on the assumptions by Eskom to look at how do we make a proposal. How does Eskom make a proposal that would have considered the views representatives of trade unions and business and other stakeholders. We raise sharply the responsibility to not to subject the South African economy to shocks of high tariff increases, but at the same time, in particular, to address the concerns of the poor, which is why in the present application by ESCOM, there are changes being proposed with regard to inclining block tariffs, because the poor households were losing out on the benefits, because the IBT system is measured on the basis of consumption and not socio-economic conditions. Now, in households that have multiple dwellings, the consumption rises, and you might mistakenly think that you might then charge them higher tariffs because of the high consumption, neglecting the fact that these are multiple dwellings within one poor household. And so the current proposal addresses that issue to cushion the poor further against the unintended consequences of the IBT. We would be directed by the outcome of the NERSA process as to the ultimate tariff, but we need to consider the build program being undertaken and the risk of it being stalled by inability of ESCOM to raise revenue to pay back the debts and the loans. Quite clearly, we need to think harder about how do we move forward with regard to the IRP2. How we will fund it, to address the questions as well about the beyond Kusile scenarios. The sooner we are able to take decisions on that matter, the better it will be for all of us, because we must begin to look at the financial modeling for that. We are in discussions with the Department of Energy about that, and should come to a determination and consult cabinet and receive cabinet approval. The infrastructure upgrade, the figure of 4 trillion rand, is now the latest figure, because when we first earlier spoke of about roughly 3.2 trillion. There were projects which had not been included. There were 17 projects then, strategic integrated projects. There are 18 now. The figure is around 4 trillion rand. And that's the figure that we are talking to the country and the private sector about, for those who are going to have to invest in these infrastructure projects. The beauty of this infrastructure program is that it provides absolute clarity as to the long term, a 20-30-year pipeline for the country in terms of infrastructure, so that business people could understand the infrastructure capacity that's going to come about, and the investments they might and will have to make in terms of that program. Maybe the final question I must respond to on my part, maybe two final questions, is around remuneration. We should, as the DG said earlier, we are now finalizing the remuneration inspired by our actions to call on all state-owned companies to freeze remuneration increases in state-owned companies. So the decision taken by the economic panel convened by the president, insofar as state-owned companies were already implementing it, nor increases in remuneration packages, we are going to finalize the remuneration guidelines, and they will then be made public. Just finally, Chair. The issues raised by the Honorable September with regard to the impact of macroeconomic policy on state-owned companies are very important. They need broader government discussion, because where we are, there are elements that are impacting quite hard on state-owned companies. But they will need to be discussed by government as a whole. The fact of the matter is that many of our state-owned companies have been undercapitalized. And because there was a period in the country where we did not invest in infrastructure, and there were policy changes, these state-owned companies were not properly capitalized, and therefore their balance sheets are weak. They are unable to pursue the programs that we would want them to pursue in a context where we broaden their mandate. And so we need to address those challenges. I think it's an important point that the Honorable September, it's a strategic point that she was making, and it would need further discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll deal with a few issues, and then I'll ask some of the colleagues to come in on some. I think the minister dealt with
don't have a very clear policy. The principle of PPPs, private-public partnership, is accepted, and I think that we've experimented with it in a number of sectors, but not with regard to large infrastructure programs such as the ones that I envisaged. So in anticipation of that area receiving, becoming an important issue for our country going forward, we have created this new position that we call DVG, Strategic Partnerships, to look at in a whole range of issues, catalytic projects that could be executed with the private sector participation, and this issue of funding frameworks and funding models. And I'd like to invite at an appropriate moment my colleague Jerry to just give you a sense of the work that we're undertaking there and how we would propose to take it forward. Many of these things, honorable members, are fairly complex. If you just take, because there was a question around private sector participation in the branch lines. There again, the question is that, are you able to do so with 100% private sector funding for those routes? Because what we found, what has emerged in the work that's been done up so far, is that they're not commercially sustainable on their own. And that it can only work where the state comes in as well by way of a subsidy. So those are matters that are being addressed at this point in time. And I do concede that ideally we would have wanted to have achieved 100% of our targets, but some of these things, like in the area of Safcorp, ARP was presenting us with a challenge that we would not have foreseen. In the area of Safcorp, the greatest difficulty for us, apart from what is the model where communities have a claim on the company, because the assets of the forest, the plantations are in land under land claims. Apart from that issue, it would be the extent to which the company can vertically integrate. And by vertical integrate, it means not just doing the logs, but doing further processing all the way down into mills and furniture. Now, separately, the competition authorities have been doing work. And it's only really recently that they've come out on that issue to indicate what could be the risks, what are the opportunities, and the conditions under which medical integration can be undertaken. And all of that has to fit into these scenarios for the future of the company. But what is important about Safcorp is that it's the one state-owned company that is still making money, that is still profitable. Plodding along, clearly also challenged because its fortunes are tied into the construction, particularly housing construction sector, which has also taken
how the airline fleet could be reconfigured as a way of responding to the commercial revenue imperative. And of course, for a while, the department had actually an in-house consultant. Now, often where we are constrained as a department in regard to particular capabilities, it's always been the case that we turn to the market for consultancy, especially for short-term limited kind of work. And so some of that money, in fact, goes on to consultants. For example, I mean, the sort of study, diagnostic study that the minister was talking about, the limited intervention, couple of weeks. And so that will always be part of our work. In fact, when we were engaging on our budget with the Treasury, they took the view that, well, don't you think you should rather use consultants as opposed to growing the establishment of the department? And our view was that we can do a bit of both. You know, grow in-house capacity for long-term work, but allow for consultancy as and when they are required. Because the sort of work around turnarounds, if that expertise lies with the consultancy, how to turn around commercial turnarounds, we don't have that in-house capacity in that area. So when confronted with those sorts of issues in our company, they in fact themselves even go out for various things into the consultancy market to procure particular services. As it turns out, those services don't come cheaply, but that's the reality of the market. I think let me just allow colleagues. I know here there's a response on Aventura and Isibuko. Check you on hanging on.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. What I've ensured, as it was indicated in DG's presentation, is one of the matters that has been outstanding for quite some time in the department. In May this year, Minister held a successful AGM with the members of the Aventura board, wherein Minister retired them and resolutions were passed for the liquidation of the company. Subsequent to that, we have submitted all the resolutions to CIPC, which is the Register of Companies, and simultaneously with the information to the Master of the High Court for official appointment of a liquidator. So the process from the department has been concluded. It's now with the Master of the High Court as the custodian of the liquidation process. Then the question on the dashboard and the Isibuko, Honourable Member Koranov, it is a valid observation that you have made. But also, as DG indicated, that governance is an evolution. So it's a constant process which you also have to look at the gaps and the challenges. One of the gaps that we realize in the department is that both the dashboard and the investor briefs are tools that we introduced to monitor performance of associates. However, a shortcoming was the periodic reviews within which we were undertaking to evaluate the effectiveness of this instrument. The investor brief is normally a 3 to 5 year document. The dashboard it's uploaded to provide quarterly reporting. So what we have since realized is that if you only limit it to those reporting cycles, you run the risk of not being agile as a shareholder to respond to, as Minister mentioned, some external factors as they arise in respect of the SOC environment. And just under the period in review, we realized that there were four external factors that affected our SOCs, firstly with financial and in respect of the onerous lending terms provided by financial institutions. You also had economic issues that in respect of ESCOM, the coal prices, as Minister alluded to, the increase in the fuel prices for SAA. We also realized that the instruments were a bit weak in terms of the responding effectively in terms of the legal policy and regulatory changes as they are introduced. So what we've since done is that we have reduced the scope within which we have to report on those. We've introduced monthly meetings with the sector team. In addition, Minister convened the chairpersons and the CEO forums where we are able then to talk about challenges that the SOCs can bring to ministers' attention timelessly. And we also deal with them through the governance and the risk forum where then we can be able to align strategic SOC risk to shareholder risk and their operational risk as well. So those are the changes that we've been introducing to the system, but we monitor it constantly because, as we said, the SOC environment is changing, and so it must be agile as well.
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond to the issue of private sector participation in terms of what the work that is currently being undertaken in strategic partnerships, is that given the massive infrastructure bill program, as a starting point, as the department, as Minister earlier alluded, is that we need to start looking at the public-public partnership and begin to optimize and really mobilize resources to ensure that the bill program is actually being implemented. So that type of public-public partnership would entail, as indicated, IDC, DBSA, to partner with the SOCs. And that's the first source. And the second source is also looking at also the pension fund. It's to explore as to how we also bring them to actually assist with the funding of the massive infrastructure bill program that we're currently undertaking. And the third aspect of it is also looking at the public-private partnerships that is also looking at the private sector to participate and partner with us. There's been some engagements that you currently have or initiatives that the department is currently undertaking in order to bring the private sector to partner with us by engaging with the institutions like the Banking Association of South Africa, which is a body that represents all the banking organizations in the country, both local and international banks. And also engaging with the Savings Associations of South Africa and the Investments Association of South Africa. So that includes the life companies and also the big asset managers. So those are the type of initiatives that the department is beginning to engage to say, for us to begin to implement the bill program, it is important to mobilize funding and coordinate ourselves in such a way that we actually do implement. So this is some of the snippets of what the public, the strategic partnership unit is currently undertaking to ensure that we actually do execute on the massive bill program that you're undertaking.
Now, the other question which was raised was the price tag of the infrastructure built and the different amounts. When you look at those numbers, and I'm not going to comment about any specific number at this stage, but when you look at those, you need to always distinguish between what is already budgeted for and approved. So it will be sitting in the national budget as an appropriation by the Treasury, and what is projected to be expended in the period ahead. So typically, the larger amount would be, and I think it's 4 trillion, would be based on the projection of what are possible projects going forward. That number will speak to that. It doesn't mean all of that money has already been secured. So currently, in terms of SOEs in our portfolio, it will be ESCOM's bill program of
which includes me too, because Ile and some of the retained service, which is in the region of 300 and over, and then of course Transnet, the market demand and investment plan, which has just recently been announced. That will account for a big chunk of what will be planned for expenditure, at least in the next 5-7 years, as it were. But I think it's always important to make that distinction. I'm going to leave it there, Chair. There was a question around the legal suit that the Chair of SAA has taken against the company. Now what we know is that that matter has been resolved, but where it arose from was that the current Chair of SAA had an agreement with the then CEO, Mr. Mula, whereupon when Mr. Mula reneged on that agreement, Mr. Koya then acted, had legal recourse in that regard. But it's a matter that comes from the past. It has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on current issues that they see at this point in time.
Just the one question, Chair, regarding the municipal markup. When again we announced the drop from 25.9 to 16% for the MYPD2 final year, we made a specific plea to municipalities to transfer the benefit to their customers. We are quite aware that this doesn't happen. And yes, it's a matter that we have raised with the Minister of Corporate Governance, and we will continue to engage with them. Hopefully we can find a solution that enables municipal customers not to be charged more on their electricity bills than is necessary, because the impact of that is not positive for those customers and for the image of the utility itself.
I think that's it on responses to questions that members have raised. Unless there's a question, we won't have a second round. Oh, your question was not answered.
Yeah, sorry, it was not a question, Chair.
Statement.
It was a comment.
encourage us to grow our own tree, as it were. So growing our own tree means we try and retain some of these people. When I was talking about an institutional model, an appropriate institutional model, I'm sure members of this committee will be aware that at some stage the department did conceive of a different institutional model, some call it agency. And that was really borrowed from the French experience. They have this high-powered structure that looks at all of their state-owned companies. There is about 80 state-owned companies in France, all under one umbrella. But it's high-powered, highly capacitated, highly expert structure. In business in France, if you are able to work for that entity, that is the highlight of people's careers in that context. Pays, competitive markets, salaries, and that type of thing. So the department, inspired by that, tried to work on something which was unsuccessful. It will have come as a result of the Act, the Governance Shareholder Act. Now, when that Act didn't pass, that was not feasible. Now, we may want to look at that and see whether we want to go there, but we may also want to look at something interim, in between. For certain specialized functions, our constitution allows that you can create a different dispensation. The Auditor General works under that dispensation. The Revenue Service works under that dispensation. Because they don't struggle to attract the skills. And that's why the Revenue Service has been so effective. And there are many others. Even Treasury, by the way. Treasury works on a different dispensation, remuneration dispensation. That's why they're able to keep capacity, keep expertise. They don't have, you'll never hear a Treasury complain, or all departments. You'll never hear a Treasury say, well, no, we have capacity issues. But all other departments have that problem. So, it may well be that there's a case to be made that you can't have a structure that oversees the largest assets. Somebody said here this morning that this is being an Anglo-American. If we take the asset base that we're responsible for, and you have an arrangement, a mere arrangement like what we have to look at that. So I think this is an area that should evolve going forward, in accordance with the trends elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. I think this brings us to the end of this meeting. Honorable Maria, did you have something to say? You're fine? Okay. Let me thank members for their participation in this meeting. And I'd like to really thank the minister and the DG and the officials in their responses to the questions raised by members. I think the committee will, as soon as the board of SAA has their feet on the ground, we will meet with them to hear what is it that they are planning to assist us to really take SAA to keep it in the skies and make it even higher than where it is. I just forgot whenever the pilot announces at what level it is. I think it's about 35,000 feet to take it even higher than this. So I'm really pleased, Vanessa, in your elaborate response on SAA. I think it will also assist proponents of privatization to think differently. But I think we are collectively keep up the good work. Do us proud. The meeting is adjourned.